Hey, Rowdies fans, it's Charlie Dennis.
This is Forrest Lasso.
You're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the bench!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Is there one final touch to be had? Aaron Guillen, Lasso, elevating,
yeah!
And Musana scores!
Rowdy's family, and welcome back to the Unused Substitute Soccer Show, where we spread the green and gold gospel all over the place about the Tampa Bay Rowdies. My name is Matthew Cox, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, my partner in crime, and the person who I'm very glad you can't see what he's doing on video right now, because I'm not quite sure, but I saw a student doing that in class today, and I yelled at him. So, Ben is here, and for the next 45 minutes or so, well... We're going to talk. I know. Okay. So I put the post out. So we were going to do this last night, and then something came up, and I had to go do some stuff in the evening, couldn't be there. And I put out, and I really was worried that people weren't going to take it seriously because I kind of have a reputation for joking around a lot. And I was like, all right, we're pushing off to tomorrow. Not because, is it because there's some like huge news we know that's coming down? No, absolutely not. Like there wasn't. That just life came up, and, it was going to be very difficult for me to get here in time and have time to do it. So we said we'll go tomorrow night. And then, well, there's been some news. I swear to God, we did not know what this is, that this was coming. And even, you know, it's more of a nugget than really news because, you know, it's someone somewhere else saying something about something. But it is definitely the talk of Twitter right now, at least. So we will get to it. First, we're going to talk about last Saturday's game. Ben, how you doing before we get to that, though? I knew there was something. Like, it's just too early to jump right into the game. There's something else. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got to ask Ben how he's doing. And we just spent like almost 45 minutes talking about how we were doing anyway. And we already know this stuff. But tell everyone else how you're doing. I already know. But for everyone else out there listening, Ben.
To pull back the curtain, kids, we've been talking for a while about all old man stuff. Yeah.
Look, it's like when you're gonna play soccer and you gotta go out and you gotta warm up and you gotta, yeah, you know, get the blood going. Like that's, we get on here, we swap some stories, we talk some stuff, and that's our version of stretching for the podcast. We're old.
Look,
we have to do stuff like this.
It's only silly if it doesn't work. That's all I'm saying. And quite frankly, it works. So you know what? Hate it if you want people, I don't care. No, I'm doing well, man. Like things are good. I mean, we just finished a nice homestand with the Rays, so it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a slower pace here, which is good. I wish the Lightning weren't being so unlightning as they are right now. But, you know, that is what it is. But life is good. Things are good. Personal life is good. Things are happening. Things are coming together nicely in my life. And I can't complain. And I didn't have to work this game, so I got to actually be a fan and drink some beer and, you know, have some fun. So it was, life is good. Life is good, man. How are you doing? You look a little different today. It's almost like there's something new. What's going on?
Brand new computer. Very fancy. It's glowing in all these different colored lights and making absolutely no sounds at all. And we had no problem getting connected and recording and everything.
21st nice. Century. 21st.
Yeah.
We're getting there. We got this, folks. We're going to get there. You know, did we mention we're old? We're getting there. This is, you know, it's going to take us some time.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll be able to do what we want to do when we get there because of how old we're going to be at that point, but we're going to get there.
We know smarter people than us that have way more technical skills. We've got this. I do work in the tech department, so technically, we're okay.
I have an associate's degree in computer network engineering that I parlayed into a slightly above minimum wage job doing computer networking stuff for a school. And then I decided to do better as a teacher, which tells you how much they value computer engineering professionals down here.
Yeah, sadly, you are not incorrect. Yay. Go Florida.
All right. So from one slightly underwhelming discussion to another, Rowdies hosted El Paso on the weekend. El Paso near the very bottom of the Western Conference table. And the Rowdies rallied for a 1-1 draw. If you look at the stats, I mean, I think I DM'd you sometime during the game, and I'm like, you know, at some point Cal Jennings is going to convert one of these chances. And then he didn't. But let's just go through the stats real quick. And just, you know, we know what the result was, and we know why it got there. But 21 shots to 9 for Tampa Bay. 21 shots to Tampa Bay, El Paso 9. 9 on target to 5 for El Paso. So the Rowdies had as many on target as El Paso did in the entire night. Possession was insane, 64-36 for Tampa Bay. It was 60-40 at halftime. Rowdies with 509 passes to 292 for El Paso with an 83% accuracy. Both teams, a lot of fouls in this game. 6 yellow cards divided up between the two. 2 for the Rowdies, 4 for them. Just looking at that, 1-1 is not the result I'm expecting to see. Does anyone do XG for USL games? I think I used to be able to find stuff out there online, and I haven't looked for it in a while. I would be interested in seeing what the XG for this game was, because I'm thinking the Rowdies had to be at least like around 3.
I want to say John Morrissey does, doesn't he?
I don't know if he does. I know there used to be someone back before a certain someone ruined Twitter, and
right.
I can't do my tweet deck stuff anymore and get all this stuff pulled up. Because I'm not paying for it. Of all the things I am not paying for, that is also on the list. I could search and find it. I just haven't. I'm gonna let you talk about the match for a little bit, and I'm gonna talk about pulling back the curtains. I'm gonna go try and search and find some of this and pull it out.
So, all right. So, like I said, thank you. I was at the game. I had a chance to be a fan, which is always fun for me because. You know, I mean, it's as a child watching the Rowdies, I mean, it kind of brings back those memories a lot. I'm always reminded of what it was like as a kid watching, you know, like my big stars, like the Perry Vanderbecks and Steve Weggerly and all those guys. So,
I mean, I was mentioned by name on air. So you want to talk about being a true fan? I think you got to go with me.
I mean, the boards turn on because I'm there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know what? Potato, potato.
I mean, someone's going to clean up after Sudol to make sure everything still works after he wrecks it.
That is a big yes. Because, well, that'll be Sudol. Anyway, so I'm there and I'm sitting at midfield, my favorite spot, up in that section between 4 and 5. And I'm just sitting there watching the game. And I mean, my initial thoughts were just how incredibly dominant we were throughout that first half. I mean, the way we attacked, I mean, there's a few things that I noticed. I mean, Forrest Lassa was definitely doing, instead of doing the long ball over the top that I think he started this season doing, mm-hmm. We saw him more doing breaking line passes on the ground, getting to the front lines. They didn't all go through, but I don't mind him taking those chances because they seem to be working more often than not. You're seeing that Perez, Manu, Cal Jennings connection up top where those guys are flip-flopping from side to side. Really, that connection up top is really putting the defenses on their heels because they just don't know whether they're going to go over top. They're going to go back and get it. Perez was all over the field on that final third. Just he has really just turned into or maybe he already was. I mean, I think we've had some great moments last season, but he was fantastic in that first half. Mm-hmm. We weren't just hitting from the old, Stu Campbell days of just going to the outside and taking crosses into a hopeful, maybe there's a guy in the middle of the field that can head the ball. It's like we were attacking through the middle. We're attacking through the sides. We were building, holding possession. When the one-touch passes, I mean, good Lord. Just so many guys look so great in this game. Defense felt really good. Farr had himself. I mean, minus the blunder. We'll get to that. Had himself. Didn't have to do a whole bunch in this game, but I thought he was really good. I know I just said the one touch passing, but like, man, that one touch passing, getting out of tight spots and moving either up the same line or across the field. I mean, just the change of the point of attack or just changing the angle of attack was this is the most fun I've had watching this team. I'm so glad that I got to sit there, you know, beer in hand, and just really watch and focus in on a couple players and see what they do. It was truly great. And I really had a great time. And it was exciting. I mean, look, their goalkeeper, and we talked about this beforehand. I think his name is Waite. You know, hats off to you, sir. I mean, you had yourself an absolute banger of a game. I mean, that guy stood on his head. The number of goal line saves that he had to make, just absolute reactionary saves, were crazy. Because, like you were saying, you're going to tell us about the XG here in a little bit. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, we should have been up 3-0 in the first half alone. And anyone who watched the game would agree. We were absolutely dominant. And if it weren't for maybe a little bit of a long touch on Cal Jennings when he's one-on-one with the goalie, he goes in. You know, Josh Perez has a chance with the ball spayed across the 18. He takes a half an extra second to get it perfectly on his left foot, buries into the middle of the chest, guy diving across to behind the goalie to stop a shot at point blank. It just, this game was just wild. And the first half was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. How was it from your viewpoint?
Brock, I mean, again, it's Drew and Ryan. They're doing a great job. And I'm not just saying that because Ryan personally shouted me out by name. So for you guys who weren't watching the broadcast or didn't go back and hear it or didn't see the tweets, what Ryan had mentioned was that El Paso's head coach had coached in Sweden, 2 years ago, the same time that Forrest Lasso was playing in Sweden. He's like, I wonder if, you know, if he knows Forrest from his time there. And I remember this guy. I remember when El Paso hired the guy, and I remember hearing the whole story. That was Lasso's coach in Sweden. And, you know, there was a whole little thing at the near the end of the year where he was, you know, suspended or dropped or whatever it was. And I DM'd you, right? I think I DM'd you this right after I mentioned it to on Twitter to Ryan. Is I guarantee you Lasso is going to go like balls out in this game because there's a little something there. I got a feeling. And, you know, you saw, I mean, he almost had a goal. He had a great game. He's one of the two Rowdies named to team of the week. I was kind of expecting him once I remembered that he was, it's going to be that kind of reunion and probably not the happiest of ones, that there was going to be a little, maybe a little extra juice in that match for Forrest. And, yep. Boy, he showed up in a big way. Yep. So I found some XG stuff while the account is USL Stats at Stats USL. And now I'm not an overall stats guy, so this is they've plotted all the teams from week 7 on a graph, the north south axis of the graph is defensive XG, and the left right the horizontal is offensive XG. The Rowdies are as far to the right as possible on offensive XG, which looks like I'm going to call that 3.5. And yep. I don't know if your overall XG is like your average of your offensive and defensive or what the deal is, but the Rowdies were the highest offensive XG team of the week. I'll give you a guess who second lowest offensive XG was.
My response alone should tell you how I feel about this team. Go ahead.
El Paso. Only Miami was lower than they were. Like El Paso was one of the worst performing teams overall offensive, defensive XG. The Rowdies were pretty much the best performing team. Yep. From this graph, I'll retweet it out later. Actually, I'm going to tweet it out repost it from the podcast account right now. So it's one of the and it's funny you mentioned about Cal and like the first touch. I was telling you before the show that, you know, one of my coworkers took his son to the game, and literally mentioned that exact thing to me, was a little bit taking an extra touch or a little bit heavy of a first touch. Had so many chances. I DM'd you at one point saying Cal has to convert one of these.
Yeah.
And then he didn't. So,
but it's certainly from not a lack of chances. I mean, the thing I love about this team, and kudos to Robbie, man, he has done a phenomenal job of taking Neil's blueprint. We're going to say he's taken Neil's blueprint, but he's taken this team, this design, and I think he's really turned it into 2.0, 3.0, like he has gone to a different level with it. Attacking wise, this team looks dangerous in a way I've never seen a Rowdies team dangerous. Like, we come at you from every angle. Those three up top are so good together. And holy crap, man. I mean, just watching the three of them work off one another, like there is a chemistry right now, and there's three different style of attackers. two of which you can completely get lost in the switch-ups from side to side, that just make them so damn fun to watch. Because it doesn't matter if it's Perez, it doesn't matter if it's Cal, whoever's on that other side, you can't just watch them. You have to keep your head on a swivel, because if you don't, then Manu's wide open in the middle and he's going to get a chance. I mean, and second half shows. I mean, the guy was right on his hip. Didn't matter. I mean, beautiful header. And this isn't the first time he's done that this season. He looked phenomenal again. Mm-hmm. Just an absolute rock at the top of the field. Just very dependable. Exactly what we hoped he would be when he came here.
Yeah. I almost feel like this is the point where I want to go into one of the things I want to talk about, but I don't think I want to get there just yet. I threw this in our show notes, got a little bit of something that Dan and I and Steven and I and Dan and Steve and I used to do, the good, bad, ugly. Look, for me, it's kind of easy. The good is Ortega's header for the equalizer goal. I mean, number one, to salvage a point, to keep the record quote unbeaten, and say quote, they are unbeaten, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it was just a beautiful play. The cross in from Crisostomo also ends up on team of the week. The little flick he puts on, it was just amazing. Just a beautiful goal. Bad was not converting any of the other eight shots on target. Yeah. We haven't lost anything. We're still unbeaten, but we've had draws that feel like they should have been wins.
Yeah.
On the field. There's one on paper where it's like, we need to go in and win this game because we are just overall a better team than the team we're playing, and it hasn't happened. And then there's ones where we've outplayed the team and we're still walking out with a draw. We'll get that. The ugly, you mentioned it, how they didn't quite catch everything on the screen. Literally, I don't know if you went back and saw how it was broadcast or saw it on the highlights, but the Hail Mary goal for El Paso, didn't see, you know, they kind of showed the setup of the free kick and, you know, feeds it back to the El Paso player who just boots it. And it's one of those, like, it took a while for the camera to get over to the other side of the field to show the goal. But in my head, I'm like, you don't take that shot unless you're really, really sure you're going to hit that. So as soon as I saw that in the air, I thought this is going to end up in the goal. Why was the keeper not in his place?
So what it looked like to me, and obviously I have no confirmation of this, but when the foul occurred, he came out to the top of his box and was yelling. Now, I don't know specifically who was yelling to, whether it was a ref, whether his own player, whether it was jaw-jacking with the opposite team. I'm not exactly sure, but he came all the way to the top of the box and was yelling. And even when the play started again, he hadn't retreated back into his box yet. And that shot, I mean, look, there was a lot of oomph behind it. He just couldn't get back. I mean, you would think with a guy with that pedigree, he'd be smart enough to know that the second the ball's back in play, shut up, get back in your net, get ready to play. But something we talked about before the show is, I mean, I know they say always be ready for those kind of plays, but how often do they happen? Like, not that often. So it's like, you'd want him to be smarter than that. But I mean, at the same time, you have kudos to Riviere, whatever the guy's name was that put the shot on. I mean,
I think it was Narvaez or something like that. Yeah. I know a couple of the El Paso fans that do their podcast, and they were doing like a live watch along. I believe one of them described it as he hit it from the Hilton. And I thought, you know, yeah. I can't. That's a great line.
Yeah,
that's a fantastic line. So shout out to Seriously Loco, the guys over the gang over at Seriously Loco for that line, because I thought that was an incredible take on it. He hit it from the Hilton.
I mean, it sure as hell felt like it. Got that ball. He went through the ball when he struck that thing. Good Lord. And that just, the whole city was just like, just took the wind out of everybody.
I mean, it got quiet on the broadcast. I mean, not from the announcers, but everything, it got quiet.
I mean,
and it, you know,
go ahead.
The only thing I was going to say about that, and this is because this kind of ties into my ugly as well, too. And on one hand, I get it. So, you know, I don't know if everyone got to see like the post-game press conference, but Robbie Nielsen describes it. You know, sometimes, you know, the other team just hits a worldie. And I'm like, it's not a worldie. That's a mental error that got taken advantage of. And, you know, luckily we have the talent to overcome that, at least to equalize it. We shouldn't have to. I hope we don't have to do that again. Right. But, you know, on the other hand, he's sticking up for his keeper. He's trying to not throw him under the bus. He's trying to, you know, not mess with the guy's confidence or whatever. You know, it's a passionate game. He made a mistake. I'm sure that's going to be dealt with behind the scenes. One of the things, you know, that was mentioned when we signed Farr is, you know, he has a propensity to play pretty far forward sometimes to get up. A little bit further than maybe we've seen keepers do in the past. And that this can, you know, from time to time, there's more good. Like, it's not like you're going to have three or four of these every season. And then he lets in a couple bad shots too. Like, guy's made some incredible saves. I'm not trying to like, you know, here and, you know, crap on his picnic basket or something, but just, oh man, you hate to see that happen to your team. You love it when you're the team doing it.
Right.
But that's one of those, you absolutely don't ever want to see that when it's your team. And it just kind of struck me in the moment. Like, I don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, man. I you know, again, I it's an unfortunate thing to happen because, and like you said, I mean, Jordan, his playing higher has definitely played to his advantage more often than not. He has had a couple incredible saves by being there or being that last line defense and playing higher. But yeah, I mean, it's like that's the risk you play at that kind of game, right? And
right.
I'd like to think that that's the exception, you know, not the rule. Like that's not going to happen every week. Even if he plays that high and he does that every game, that's not going to happen every week. It's just, you got to be, as an opposing player, you got to have your head on a swivel. I mean, remember when Beckham did it for United? What was it? God, at this point, it's been 20 years ago, but no one had heard of it. Like, no one thought to do those kind of things. And it was just like, you have to have your head on a swivel to do it. Like, we see it a lot more often now, but it's like, you got to be looking for it because you get lost in the moment of the game. You get lost in the transition, the buildups. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I want to defend it, but I mean, I'm equally frustrated too because, you know, I mean, look, he set the bar high. I expect good things from him. And when he lets in a goal like that, because he's, you know, he's mouthing off instead of being dialed in. And again, this is a team that we should have beat. We should have beaten this team.
Yeah.
You know, and again, their goalie had himself a game, a brilliant game. I don't want to take away from their keeper, but short of him, do we dominate this team? This is the most complete game I've ever seen this Rowdy's team play.
It was, yeah, and that's, you know, we started talking about it last week. Like they still don't have a win all season.
Yeah,
but their losses have been by one goal. It's not like they're just getting absolutely boat raced out of these games. It's they're right there, but they're not, you know, getting over the line. You know, yes, it's a game I think we should have won. I don't necessarily believe that, you know, it should have been like, you know, 3-4 nothing or something like that, but it could have been.
I don't know. I feel like it should have been. Honestly, I do. I mean, while their keeper made some great saves, it's also on us for not putting the ball in the back of the net when we had the chance.
Yeah.
Because we absolutely had a few. I mean, Chrysostomos won in the, what was it, like 62nd minute where he glances off the outside of the post, first time strike. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's the whole Mighty Ducks, quarter of an inch the other direction, you know, you completely miss a goal. Whatever. I mean, quarter of an inch the other direction, it's in the back of the net. And I get it's a game of inches, but like, I feel like this is a game we should have won. I mean, we dominated in all facets of the game. And due to that strike from past half field or midfield, that was a gut punch. But I sit back on the fact that this was the best I've seen this team play. We've been asking for a complete game front to back. We got it. I mean, we got a complete game from this team. And the scoreline won't necessarily reflect that. But this team, if they play like this, and Robbie said in postgame as well, if this team performs like this throughout the rest of the season, we're going to be where we want to be come playoff time. It may not happen exactly like we wanted to, but I mean, look, we were in the same position last year. How many games did we not win? How bad were we sitting? We're frustrated with the beginning of the first, 5-6 weeks under Neil last season. I mean, like, these things happen. I mean, it's okay. And there's a brand new coach, brand new players, you know, and to me, this team is showing all the signs that we want. They're clicking, they're communicating well, the one touch play, which is always a good sign that the team is on the same page. You see that the team is obviously gelled very well. And to be at this point in the season and we're not playing our best, or we just finally played one of our best games and we think we can do better, and we're sitting in fifth in the East right now, which I think is the better of the two divisions. Like, I'm not unhappy. I want more, but we should want more, right? Like, that's what they like as a fan, we should want more. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's frustrating to be in fifth place, but I'm still very, I mean, we're still plus six goals differential right now.
Yeah. Third most goals scored, at least in the East, I believe the entire league.
Yeah. Charlotte and Louisville, who have been, look, phenomenal. Those are two good programs.
Right.
They are doing well. I mean, as much as I despise Charleston, they have a great head coach who has obviously got that team clicking, rolling them from last season. Louisville is Louisville. They've revamped. They have rebuilt. They've got a killer striker up top. I mean, they're a damn good team. I mean, look, that's what we want, right? Like, if you want to go to the playoffs, you want to play the best teams. You want to be the best team. You want to get to the final. Like, this is what you got to do. Yeah. So, and I want to be there.
Like, I'm looking at this, and you know, we talked about this. It bugged me a little bit more on the evening and maybe on Sunday a little bit. But honestly, I don't know if I ever told you this. Like, we used to record the show, I want to say, on like a Monday night, and then we'd put it out right then. And then, you know, we talked about it a little bit, and then we kind of went to Wednesdays because we were like, you know what, we don't need to be overreacting, you know, positively or negatively to the game. And if you're doing this on a Sunday or a Monday, you're still like, you know, the thing that was bugging me Saturday night, Sunday, and it's not as much now. I mean, because number one, it's true, but yes, we are unbeaten. Can we just stop saying it though? Like, it's to me, it's one thing if you're two wins and four draws, and it's like, starting to, it almost feels like an excuse. And I know it's not, because it's technically accurate. And you know, there's what, two, three unbeaten teams in the East right now. Charleston's on top. Detroit's won all of their games so far. And then we've got, you know, two wins and four draws. And we both feel like should have won this game, probably should have, at least on paper, gone out and gotten something more out of the Pittsburgh game. Because we're going to play some tougher teams, and I think we're going to face a pretty tough team this week. Yeah. And this is what I'm interested in looking at. And so you mentioned, you know, slow starts to season sometimes, even with Neil here. I talked to him one time, and I don't remember which season it was, but it was early on, and I asked him something about, you know, beginning of the season, and he said, you know what, I don't look at where we are in the standings. I don't look at anybody else in the standings until we're like 8, 9, 10 games in, mm-hmm. because you don't know what you've got. You don't know what the other teams have. You're still, you know, you have a preseason, but you're playing, you know, college teams, and you're playing a lot of your youngsters and trialists, and you don't have a full sense, and guys aren't in like their peak, you know, game shape at that point in time. He's like, so you really don't know. So we're kind of getting near that point where you can start to kind of make some decisions and some thoughts about it and have some opinions. And I posted this last night because Mike Pendleton was you know, tweeting about just the overall form of the season so far. Like, I'm not panicking. I'm not, you know, terribly upset. Could we have done better in the first couple games? Yeah, sure. We don't have six wins out of six games, so yeah, you can do better. I don't think there's a reason to panic. We have seen like moments of really great potential from this team in all areas of the game. We've seen great saves from the goalkeeper. We've seen incredible play by the defense. We've seen a strong midfield, and you mentioned we've seen some you know, real great attacking up front, you know, and you see that reflected in the goals scored this season. We've also seen some head scratchers. What I think is, you know, we knew with Neil that he was going to handle it, and we knew, you know, pretty much how he was going to handle it, and we knew it was going to come around. And it's not a knock on Nielsen yet, but we don't know how he's going to navigate that part.
Yep.
From everything we've seen so far, I'm pretty certain that we're going to end up in a good place, and we're going to be, you know, happy where we are when the season comes out. But, you know, there's been a lot of changes on and off the field. Everybody has some adjusting and some adapting to do and some waiting to see, which is kind of where we are now. You mentioned having seen some complete, like, to me, I think we've seen two really complete performances so far. And that was this game, which was a draw. And then the Miami game is the other one that jumps out to me. And the only thing that kind of bothers me a little bit is that we've seen that complete play against two very low in the table teams at this point.
Yeah.
I'll feel better. I'm sure it will happen at some point, but I'll feel better. Well, you know, New Mexico's coming up, and we'll talk about this when we get to the a little bit more when we get to the preview. They're third in the West. They're 4-1-1. But if you compare these two sides statistically, there's not a lot of room between them. And I don't know who all New Mexico has played because it's the Western Conference. I don't have time to pay attention to that. So I don't know if, you know, were they playing a bunch of tough teams so far where a 4-1-1 record looks pretty good and some of these stats look pretty good if you're doing it against the Sacramentos and the Phoenixes and whoever else out in the Western Conference. You know, I need to do a little bit deeper dive. I got 4 weeks left, 4 or 5 weeks left in the school year. The one thing I don't have time to do is deeper dives on soccer stats. When we get to June, July, August, I will have some all kinds of information, but I'm not there yet. So I threw another thing in here that we used to do. I just kind of was tinkering with the show notes a little bit earlier this week. Moment of the match, and I put that in there because even though it's not one that involved necessarily something positive from the Rowdies, that 75-yard goal has to be the moment of the match. Like that's, and I see that there was another game where there was like a midfield just inside the midfield long goal like that, and they're calling them goals of the season. To me, that's not a goal of the season kind of candidate. And I'm not just saying that because I'm bitter it happened against my team, but it's like you took a long shot on a relatively open net. Like a goal of the season is like, you know, you bent one on a free kick or something, or you know, just absolutely banged one from somewhere. Like to me, it'll be much better. Goal of the week. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It's sure. And to me, it's one of the things, and this is another mark in the positive for what we've seen from the Rally so far. Like, you know, in other games and in other seasons and other, you know, other teams, that's like a wake up call that, hey, you need to get your stuff together. That wasn't a wake up call for Tampa Bay. We were playing well before it. We played well after it and we found an equalizer. You just kept, you know, pushing and pushing and pushing and found one. And, you know, sure, we felt like there could have been several others that it just didn't happen. But that'll bring us to man of the match, which, I'm going to let you speak on this because you mentioned online you had something you wanted to talk about, and I'm going to let you run with this one.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, kudos to the guys that got selected team of the week. I mean, Chrysostomo, Lasso, well-deserved. I thought they had fantastic games, and they have been playing really good. I mean, so I think they're well-deserving of being called up to team of the week. But, I mean, as a defender and defensive center mid at heart, kind of giving it away, I key in a lot in that position because I feel like I, in some ways, understand it a little better as far as what the job entails. Obviously, not the level these guys do it, but at least I understand what goes into that position and kind of the pressures that you face. I really zeroed in on Lewis Hilton. And let me just say, this team lives and dies. Not that that's any surprise to anyone because we all know how important he is, but his ability to take us out of a very tight 4-on-2 where we are in the two, get us out of their 1-2 touches, break it to the other field or move it up the field or bring us back, but maintain possession, but in a very positive force. He was absolutely dominant, easily the best player on the field. I don't care who you watch. If you could watch every single player on that field for the 90 minutes, and I'm telling you right now, there's not another guy on the field that did what Lewis Hilton did or had the effect on the game the way that guy does. He is so damn good. We are so fortunate to get him. And I tell you, for any young kid that's looking to understand how to play that role and how to be a major leader on a team, even without having the armband, which I think, I mean, is important, sure. But I think to do it by leading by example, that guy lives and breathes that. I mean, he is just so damn important. I mean, look, no one's going to see his blazing speed because he doesn't, but he doesn't need it. His understanding of where the ball is going to be and where he needs to be in the best position, one, to give his team an outlet, or two, to be the one, you know, to be the give and go to get it to the next position. He is always where he's supposed to be. And that is a testament to his understanding of the game, his understanding of the system, his understanding of his teammates. He was absolutely brilliant. And I just want to give that guy kudos because he doesn't show up on stat sheets, but there is not a guy on this team that I feel like has the effect the way that Lewis Hilton does. And he had himself a freaking game. So Lewis Hilton, you get my man of the match. You know, hats off to you, sir. What a game.
My contribution to this whole segment was going to be Ortega scored a goal. So you put a little bit more thought into yours. I'm going to defer to you. And because, yeah, Lewis Hilton's incredible. Also, he's got a pretty decent taste in Taylor Swift songs, as I've learned from Instagram. Hey,
again, shout out to the social media team at Rowdies. Y'all killing it. Keep doing it. I love it.
All right. Current standings, like we said, Rowdy's still in fifth after the draw. Charleston is leading after eight matches. They've played eight matches somehow. It's only we just finished week seven. They're time traveling. They've got 18 points. Louisville City, 15 points. Detroit City, 15 points. Birmingham, 10 points, but a tiebreaker on total wins over us with 10 points also. Hartford in sixth with 9 points. Loudoun at 7 points. Rhode Island sneaking into the top eight, the playoff spots, with 7 points. And then you've got North Carolina, Pittsburgh, Indy, and Miami bringing up the rear. North Carolina, 6 points. Pittsburgh and Indy with 5 points apiece. Miami in dead last at 4 points. So like we said, club news, Lasso, Chrysostomo make team of the week. Next couple of things aren't necessarily 100% totally just Rowdy stuff, but we're going to throw them in here too. Neil Collins sacked at Barnsley with one match remaining. Team was sitting in fifth place. I believe it's the top two get automatically promoted. And then there's a playoff for with three, four, and five, and then maybe third through six, whatever it is, sacked. And look, I was posting about this online. Like they've got to win their last match, and I believe they need some other teams to drop points to ensure they remain in the playoff spots. And you know, they had been pushing for automatic promotion at a couple points in the season. They were in the playoff final last year, so the expectations were up there when they brought Neil in. And look, Neil's a big boy. He got in his job. He knows what this is, what it's like, and it's the first time this has happened to him as a manager. But he knows exactly what he was getting into. So it's not like, you know, oh no, don't hurt my Neely's feelings. And yes, I'm obviously biased because I believe he's a great guy and a great manager, and he is going to land on his feet. I'm not worried about that. But to me, you know, they'd only gotten a point out of their last five games. They lost four out of the last five. And to me, it's a little reactionary. It's you got to win one game, and this is the guy who got you to this point where you're in these playoff spots. I guess if you can bring in a person that's going to have a guaranteed impact to guarantee the win the game, then you do it. But I don't know that move that any, you know, they just brought in, I don't think they even brought him in. They just put it one of the assistants as the interim manager. If I was running a team, that's not how I would make the move, because I feel you're looking at, you know, the recent run of games, which weren't great, but you're not looking at the overall body of work with, you know, 30, 40 something, however many games they played. Also, I was kind of hoping to see, you know, I would have liked to have seen them gotten promoted, but also if they hadn't gotten promoted and Neil was still there, they could have showed up in the next season of Welcome to Wrexham, because Wrexham's going to be in League One next year too. But it would have been, I feel sorry for Neil. He'll have more opportunities. He will be fine.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, to me, it felt a little short-sighted. I'd be lying if I said I did a deep dive into this, but from the little bit of reading that I did, obviously, if you look at fans of the team, they are all like, oh, right move, he lost the team, blah, blah, blah. But if you read other pundits like Report of the League, they say, you know, they all think that while getting rid of Neil may have been necessary, it's the same front office, the same staff that bungled things the last couple of years that, you know, are not giving him what he needed to be successful this season. So, you know, it seems like I can't tell if Neil got fired or if he left, but it seems like he's the one that fell on the sword for this one. Yeah. Which is unfortunate, because like you said, we're biased. Like, I mean, I'm always going to be Team Neil. I don't care. I mean, I feel it's a short-sighted decision. I think your long-term gain with Neil, even if you didn't get promoted this year, given obviously what happened last year, I still think you would have been better off, even if you're still there for another season. It was only going to get better. But, you know, like you said, Neil's a big boy. He'll land on his feet. He grew up in these systems. He knows how this game works. He'll be fine.
I kind of wondered, and I don't think this is what happened, because when I start to say it or type it out, it just doesn't necessarily seem extremely plausible. But I almost wonder if they kind of came to him and said, hey, we're going to make it, you know, there's one game left, you know, basically coaching for your life. We'll make a change after the season if it doesn't work out. And he just said, you know what, if you're going to make a change, do it now. I don't know. It doesn't, the way that sounds in my head doesn't, like, where it ended up is not where I started out at. So I don't know, but it could be a possibility.
You know, random thought here, and I'm just going to just float this out at you. I mean, what do you think the odds he comes back to the States? Do you think he would be willing to take another USL position or an MLS job? Do you think even one of those might be available for him? Do you think somebody would even be interested in picking him up? Because I feel like he did make a mark in the US market.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know? Could I see him as like an MLS assistant? Sure. That I think could always be a possibility. He never said anything along these lines, but I kind of have a hard time seeing him coaching another USL team besides Tampa Bay. It would be kind of weird.
Well, okay. But I mean, separate our own feelings from it.
A Western Conference, but I mean, just the you know, the fact that, you know, it was Bill Edwards in the club that gave him a chance and backed him and gave him, you know, the room to work with. And, you know, he had all these great things to say about the Rays ownership. I don't know. I maybe if it was a Western Conference team, possibly, or an expansion club or something like that. But, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if I'm another USL club and I've got money to spend on a coach, I'd go get him.
I could definitely see them making a run at him. I have a feeling though that he's going to want to rebound and rebound in Europe or England. Maybe it's a League Two, maybe it's another League One. I mean, there's like 500 clubs in these lower leagues in England anyway.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like literally the last five games were not great. He'd had if you had told me that, you know, and now, Barnsley was a team that was in the playoff final last year and just missed out kind of heartbreaking fashion in getting promoted. So it was a good team to begin with. But if you told me that a guy who had only worked at the second division U.S. level was going to come in and, you know, it's League One in England, but it's a lot higher pressure situation. It's a lot different than working at this level here. To me, it seems like at least it would be. The amount of success he had this season up until this last stretch to me was really impressive.
Agreed.
I think he was even like the League One, like coach of the month in League One at one point early on the season. Like, it, you know, he didn't go there and, you know, completely just bomb out. Like, he had a good run.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely agree. And you're right. I mean, look, and having played and made a career in the UK, look, he's got enough contacts and people out there. He's going to get picked up. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, odds are someone's going to, even if they pick him up as an assistant, they'll pick him up. He's going to be around. I just, Neil was born to be a coach. I mean, like, obviously, post playing career, you know, being a coach is very much in his DNA. And I think he definitely found his second life in soccer by doing so. And so, look, we see enough of these coaches get recycled around. Like mediocre coaches, I mean, good coaches, you know, they'll get scooped up. I'm sure he'll be fine. But yeah, you know, just food for thought.
Do I believe that he ends up back in the U.S. at some point? I absolutely do.
I mean, yeah. I mean, unless he gets in with like a championship team or top tier. I mean, look, he could very well over the next 10 plus years find himself in a situation where he's taken over a major club in Europe. And it could happen. I mean, is it going to happen? I don't know. I mean,
I'm going to throw something out there, but I got to talk about something else first.
Do it. Go for it.
All right. So the next up, I saw this after I got home this evening. My eighth graders had a volleyball game at school against another school. We were in the playoffs tonight, got knocked out. Good job for them overall, but lost to the, I think, three-time defending champions. Anyway, so Indy 11, has been working towards a stadium deal in Indianapolis back since the NASL days, if I remember correctly. I mean, since they got started, they've been playing at IUPUI and have been working on trying to, and it seemed like they had a deal that they had reached a deal with the city. And there was this whole, like one of those kind of like entertainment districts, sporting things that are like popping up everywhere. And then apparently news got out today that the mayor has like pulled that at the last minute, you know, changed his mind on that. and has been meeting with representatives from MLS about bringing a team to Indianapolis, which apparently would not involve Indy 11 whatsoever. And, you know, we know, we've seen it happen in other markets. MLS comes in where there's already an established team, established fan base, and that team's gone. It was mentioned in, at least in a tweet, I don't know if it was the Indy mayor himself that said this or someone else said, other markets that are under consideration are Tampa Bay and Detroit. So now the MLS to Tampa Bay thing getting back up and running. I'll say this. I support the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Yeah.
My preference would be the Tampa Bay Rowdies as they, you know, are currently constituted in USL, because I like the experience. I like the situation. I like the game days, even though I haven't been to one. And now this weekend's looking like it's in doubt too. I still have other life stuff going on. Like, the big things are mostly done, but we've got other things to take care of.
We're good. We got it covered.
This is my preference, how things are right now. If ownership thinks it's sustainable and we can, you know, do the, you know, to kind of be like the Louisville cities where, you know, you've got a great stadium situation. You're one of the top teams. You're doing really good with what you got where you're at. But I support the Tampa Bay Rowdies. And what I think could possibly be different in this situation, and this might just be me looking through green and gold glasses, MLS is going to Indianapolis, and it's not going to be Indy 11. And that sucks for those fans, because if that happens, that team's going to disappear. And yep. Those fans have worked, you know, it's insane. They've been through bad times when they got started, some great seasons, eventually going in the NHL championship against the Cosmos when they lost that one, the penalty kick thing, to kind of, you know, and then making the move to USL, and it kind of rebuilt everything. And it's going to absolutely suck if that's torn away from them. And I hate that. And I hate that it's, you know, that MLS does this thing where they swoop into communities where they've seen a foundation started by, whether it's USL or when it was NASL or, you know, whatever league it is. And they swoop in and kind of, you know, plant a team and just kind of take over. The one thing I think would be different in Tampa Bay situation versus Indy or Detroit, and again, I'm not advocating for this. My preference is the status quo, but I support the Tampa Bay Rowdies. And to me, it's going to be almost a situation like Minnesota was, where Minnesota kind of had to, you know, get on board or their club was going to disappear. Yep. If it came down to the Rowdies not existing or the Rowdies existing in MLS, I support the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Yep.
And to me, you know, we know that MLS has flirted with Detroit before, and they are not interested in dealing with Detroit City.
Yeah.
We can see that they are not interested in dealing with Indy 11. If MLS is going to come here, I don't know who else they go to besides the Rays ownership. Who else has that status? Who else has that profile? Who else is able to attract these additional investors to come in and possibly partner with the team? And then, you know, there's a million other questions to answer. Where do they play? What's the ownership group? You know, all this kind of stuff. I don't even want to get into that part yet, because this is all, hey, this could be a thing that maybe happens after this thing that might be happening. Like, it's, you know, we're kind of speculating on steps, you know, C, D, E, and F, and we're not even at step B yet. So I don't love the idea, but again, I don't want the team to disappear. And at some point, if this team continues to be successful, people are going to come calling. Other investors, other team, people interested in owning the team, other leagues interested. Like, it's going to happen. I don't like it. To me, it's another reflection of the kind of like abject lack of leadership from U.S. soccer to let MLS kind of do whatever they want in markets all across the country. And again, I retweeted this from the podcast account. John Morrissey, who grew up as an Indy 11 fan and always says anything that we're going to say better than we ever could say it, has already said this better about Indy 11 and his relationship with them. It's a mess. I hate the soccer wars. I hate the thing, but I hate that, you know, U.S. soccer is kind of laissez-faire about what they get involved in, and you know, they, you know, let them get away with doing whatever they wanted to do with Open Cup, despite being against, you know, regulations and rules on paper, because they have the money to do it. And you know, I know there are people who are going to be like, great, this would be fantastic. Go to MLS. Go talk to Inter Miami fans who got priced out of their season tickets because Messi. Yep. Talk to other fans of other teams who couldn't buy their ticket because their tickets went up because Miami was going to come to town, whether or not Messi plays or not. And honestly, you know, by the time the deal gets done and the move happens, if Messi's in the league for more than 3 years, I'm going to be very surprised. Like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't love it. But I support the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Well, look, I'm with you on this. Like, we talked about a little bit about this before as well. And I mean, look, if MLS is the next step for this team, I think the advantage that we have over a lot of clubs is we have history. You know, we're an original club. I mean, look at Seattle, Portland. I mean, these are old original 75 teams, man. I mean, like, the Rowdies are a brand that people want a piece of. And I mean, I would say to our fans, while I, for all the reasons that you stated, I agree. There's a flip side to that too. There's an opportunity to grow the brand globally beyond what we are. I think there's new investment that we get into facilities and stadium options. I think we see new players come in. I think you see a big jump in attendance. But what does that say for all the hardcore guys that have been there forever that could potentially be priced out? You're absolutely right. I mean, it's, I don't think there's a, not to mention USL, there's a personal touch that I appreciate about this level. There's an access to teams and USL that I think has kind of happened organically that I really appreciate, that you lose at the next step, which is more corporate, which, look, it comes with the territory. It is what it is. And again, we're talking about things that could be, maybe, possibly, we don't know. We're not even at A. You said we're at B. I don't even think we're at A, like half an A. We're not lowercase A. Right? We're nowhere near this. I mean, this is just, it's thrown out there because, you know, Tampa Bay Rowdies are just a name and, you know, it's recognition. Should we stay USL? I'll be happy if we go MLS. I'm not going to lie. I'm still going to be happy. I'm with you. I'm always going to be Team Rowdies. I'm always going to want this team to be around. Plus another chance to kick the crap out of Orlando, which will always make me happy, because their fans are the absolute worst. But yeah, I don't know. I feel for Indy, man. I feel for that team. I mean, to have your mayor essentially go completely around all this hard work, all this grassroots stuff that they have built and established, and then basically say, yeah, about that, we've got something else. We have a different offer. We know that you've done all this work, but we like this money better. And it's just, it feels like a really crappy, slimy way to go about it. And I'm not a fan, and I feel for all of them, because if that happened here, I'd be devastated. And I can guarantee you one thing: if somebody tried to come in here and do an MLS team that isn't the Rowdies, I'm not supporting it. I'm not watching.
Nope. I mean, just So I don't know. I made this reference online, and then I joked about how this was a movie. So Dan probably hasn't seen it, because Dan never sees any of the good movies. Possibly you have. A classic of American cinema from 2006. Andy Garcia, Ryan Reynolds, Jeremy Piven, Smokin' Aces.
Ooh.
Ever seen it? There's another person. I can't remember the name off the top. I got to look and see, because it's another famous.
Yes, that's the click and clack of my.
I know it was yours or mine, because I was typing too. Ray Liotta. Ben Affleck has a little cameo appearance. I think it's Chris Pine's first movie. It's kind of a crazy cast. Jason Bateman's in it. Alicia Keys is in there. But
I don't think I have, actually. Now that I'm looking at it,
there's a whole scene where someone's trying to make a deal with the FBI, and they have a deal in place, and then all of a sudden the deputy director of the FBI gets some top secret information and just cancels the whole deal. And I'm like, dude, Indy's mayor is Andy Garcia from Smokin' Aces.
Yeah.
And if anyone else can, and I tweeted this out, and I'll say it on here too, if anyone else completely gets that reference, feel free to DM me, because we are now close friends and I want to exchange Christmas cards.
Oh, no Christmas Carol from Matt this year.
Classic American. And what, you know, you got time to go watch a classic American cinema. I might just go watch it tonight before I even go to bed.
I'm going to throw it on my list of movies. We can just add that to the world.
Just big, dumb, stupid fun. It's good stuff.
I like
there that. Was a direct to TV or direct to movie, whatever sequel. And don't mess with that one, but this is good. It's got Curtis Armstrong from Revenge of the Nerds. Like it's got a fantastic cast. That's all I'm going to say about it. Go watch it if you haven't. Description I saw was not bad. Lots of unnecessary violence. It's like, yeah, you know what? I teach middle school in Florida. I'm used to it. All right. The last one, since we kind of put the bummer one in there with the whole MLS swooping in stuff. The Tampa Bay Sun, part of the segment I'm going to call the unused substitutes, or should it be the sun used? I don't know. I said unused substitutes. It's easier to type than say.
I mean, you're doing a great job. I just want to say.
I've mangled it like seven different ways right there. But the Tampa Bay Sun themselves liked it and replied to it. You and they replied to you over the weekend. You posted some pictures. I need to get some gear too. I'm excited for it. They've announced their first signings, and I believe these are the first USL Super League signings too. So I think it's fantastic. This club's kind of just like the Rowdies are kind of one of the trailblazers in USL, one of the faces of the league. That the Sun are going to be that for Super League too. Made their first three signings, and two of them lots of connections to the local area, which is kind of cool. They brought in Erica Timrak, who grew up in Bradenton, Lakewood Ranch area. So I like that. You got someone from Bradenton and played college soccer at UF, has played in NWSL, she played for Bayern Munich. She had a couple appearances with the U.S. Women's National Team. Also brought in midfielder Jordan Listro, who is USF Women's Soccer all-time appearance leader. Spent some time with the Canadian national team, has played in with Orlando Pride. And then Domi Richardson, who is from California, went to school in Missouri and has also played at NWSL, a couple different clubs NWSL level. So, number one, I think it's kind of cool. You've got a lot of experience in, they're wanting to establish themselves, that they got this first division sanctioning along with NWSL. So you've got people at that talent level. You've got people who have had not like long, glorious international careers, but have been in those camps, have been picked, have been against international competition, have earned caps for the country and kind of gotten a taste of that life as well, too. And going to bring that here. It's smart that they're able to find players with local connections, but not just because they have local connections. Like, these are talented players who, they think will make an impact at this level. So I'm very excited to see it. I games are starting, I think, in August. It's going to be like back to school already, but I would love to be able to buy season tickets, but I mean, look, I've Rowdy season tickets and I haven't made it to St. Pete yet. I don't know how many times I can make it up to Tampa, but I'm definitely going to make the effort to go up there for games when I can, because I want to see it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think, they're looking like they've put together one of the, we know they have a solid front office.
Yep.
With Christina Uncle. We know they have a good head coach with Shilty Brown out of USF and starting to put together get the foundations of a pretty good roster here. So it's cool. When one of these leagues starts up or when these clubs start up, you can go one or two ways. You can go and bring in talent like this. Sometimes you go looking for like the semi-pro amateur and you're going to bump them up and, I like the moves they've made. They went for, talent that has been at this level, but also, like I said, has that local connection and has people around here excited.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, and also we have a Rowdies connection there. Sam Ishii, director of soccer operations. She's former Rowdies. She's done a few things with the Rowdies, but I think most recently, or her last position was obviously doing the Rowdies youth thing. But obviously, I'm a big fan of hers, and the fact she's with the club, puts me on board with them. I got my gear, I got my shirt, got my scarf. I am going to get season tickets, even if I can't make all the games. I'm going to do my part to support this team. I want to see this thing grow. I'm really excited to have a local professional women's soccer team, and I want to see it be successful. I think people talk about how. One of the biggest things that women's sports need is they need investment from the fans. You need people to take your time and put your hard-earned money into the team. And I'm going to do that. I want to see what they do. I think they've got some exciting stuff they're trying to do and a brand new league. You know, this is going to be fun. I'm excited. I think these three signings definitely got me excited, you know, as well about, you know, the direction of this club. And I you know, it's going to be fun. I know you kind of half signed me up to do the unused substitutes. I don't know that that'll necessarily be the case. But my plan is to definitely watch. And I definitely want to report on, you know, what I see going on there, because I want to see them grow. They've got some people on the social media side that are going to do the same thing. I believe somebody we know, is it Lizzie or someone, it will be doing.
Yeah, Lizzie over with RBLR, and they're looking for co-hosts, writers. You're interested in doing that? Like, we're not trying to jump out there. Like, they've been putting the work in on on developing an entire show around it. I'm not going to jump on that and try and, you know, do that same thing, but we definitely want to mention them from time to time when there's news, and they are starting to make news, and I have a feeling there'll be more coming as we go.
Yeah, agreed. As we get closer and closer, I mean, obviously they've got the tryouts coming up on the May 5th and 6th. I want to say is they're doing a season ticket holder event. You can come out. It's a full VR thing. You actually can put on your goggles and sit in your seat and kind of see how the whole thing's going to look. I think that's really cool. I'm excited. I'm going to go and get my season tickets. Then I was talking to the director of sales a couple days ago. She resent my invite to make sure I'm there. So I'm going to take off the 5th and be there and be a part of this. I want to go. You can also do, they've got a pickleball tournament going on, so you can play a little pickleball. So, you know, I'm going to try not to pull a Mike Carlton and throw my Achilles out. You know, and just go have some fun, man. I think this is cool. You don't get it. Chances like these that often to join in on a brand new franchise and a brand new club, a whole new brand new thing. And I think it's exciting to actually be a part of this, you know? So I'm really excited to be joining and getting on the train here.
Nice. 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 All right. Speaking of upcoming games, I don't know that you really even really going to upcoming games, but we're going to go to upcoming games because the Rowdies are back home this weekend hosting New Mexico United, the black and gold from way out in New Mexico, which apparently is a state in the United States. I've never heard of it, so I don't know. A little bit about both teams. Like I said, we got some stats comparing and contrasting here. Rowdies, like we said, still fifth in the East, 2 wins, 4 draws. 10 points, a plus 6 goal difference. New Mexico's third in the West, 4 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss, 13 points, but a 0 goal difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a team like the Rowdies who are scoring at a pretty good clip, going up against a team with a 0 goal difference, you know, if we play smart defensively and we manage to take some chances on offense, I think we can do it. So both teams have played 6 games. Rowdies have 4 more goals on 2 more shots on target. Assists pretty much the same. The New Mexico is a little bit more accurate when it comes to shooting accuracy, but conversion rate's pretty much the same. Defensively, Rowdies have conceded 2 fewer goals. Rowdies only had the 1 clean sheet, the 0-0 draw against Pittsburgh, but they've limited the number of shots. They've faced 8 fewer shots than New Mexico has. They've won 74 tackles versus 56. With an 82% tackle success rate to like 68%. It's close to being nice, but not quite there. Rowdies have won more duels. Dual success rate is, I believe that's exactly equal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those, like, you look at New Mexico, you see third in the West, you see, you know, 4 wins, and you're like, yeah, this is going to be a little bit of a tougher challenge. But statistically, I don't think there's a whole lot between these two teams.
No, there's really not a lot on paper to really separate the two. I mean, they're going to play a possession style game, same way that we do. I mean, and not to, you know, say anything groundbreaking here, but the game's going to be won in midfield. It's going to be, you know, who holds the middle of the field best, who can control the ball through the middle and get it up to the final third. I think, you know, this is going to be a good test for us. I think, you know, New Mexico is a good enough team to where, you know, they definitely have the ability to come in and assert themselves. We're going to be seeing the return of Deion Harris, which is sad. I miss Deion.
Yeah.
He was a great guy.
Glad to see him come. You know, glad to see him. He's still out there doing it. Real quick, I pulled up their schedule so far. Here's their results. So number one, they made it to the USL quarterfinals last year, knocked out by Sacramento. To start off this season, they beat Pittsburgh 1-0. They drew with Rhode Island 1-1. Their one loss was they got swamped. This is why their goal difference is zero. They got swamped 4-0 by Charleston. Charleston will do that. Yep. They defeated Phoenix 1-0. They defeated El Paso 3-2. They had an Open Cup game against this makes me mad. They knocked out, became one of my favorite teams in the Open Cup. The Lubbock Matadors beat them 3-1, and then back to league action against North Carolina FC 3-2. So the two things that are there, you know, we have a lot of common opponents. The one thing that jumps out to me is games that I feel we should have won, like North Carolina, like El Paso, they did win. Yep. We managed to get draws from those. They drew Rhode Island, a team we managed to put a bunch of goals past. Got by Pittsburgh, 1-0. You know, we had a goalless draw there. So, again, there doesn't really seem to be a whole lot between these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, not to beat a dead horse here, but it's going to be one of the midfield. I mean, like, that's true for every game, but I think definitely in this kind of game, whoever owns the middle of the field is gonna come out on top here. I really feel like if we can take the momentum from last game into this game, especially in front of our home crowd, I really believe that we can come out on top here, and I think it'll be a launching pad for us, assuming we win, to proceed throughout the rest of the league, the rest of the season. So it's a good test. I mean, I'm excited. I mean, the team is playing very well. I mean, substitutions, like, for instance, I know we already kind of done talking about the last game, but like Charlie Dennis coming in for Lewis Hilton, which I did not see that coming at all, but it worked and he was good. And that's like his first minutes of the year. So we're making good decisions. The guys coming off the bench are hungry. The guys on the field are connecting well. I mean, it's going to be a good game. I mean, if you don't have your tickets yet, get them. I mean, if you're listening to us, you probably are a season ticket holder or somebody goes games regularly. But, man, get your friends out there. Get people out of these games. I mean, it's a good environment. It's a lot of fun. There's going to be an extra food truck out, I found out. I don't remember who they are off the top of my head, but there'll be another food truck there. It's going to be good, man.
I do like food.
And look, it's going to be fireworks. Oh, well, same. Although my trainer on Saturday will probably disagree with me. That's all right. I like her. She's good. She kicks my butt in the right way. So, but I mean, like this, we got fireworks post game, which are always fun. I always enjoy it. I mean, it's even on the days at work. I mean, it's a longer day, but you know, I mean, it's as a fan, I can appreciate what it is, and it's you know, it's going to be a good environment. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a really good team to watch. I'm excited to see how this team responds to that tie from last week. So. Yeah.
You mentioned it being, you know, getting a good result in this game, picking up that third win, hopefully, good little launch pad for the next series of games. Because, after that, we've got Memphis, who flipped back to the Western Conference this year, currently in 10th place in the West out of 12 teams.
Yep.
Then we've got the Birmingham back to back Open Cup and league games. Birmingham is equal on points with us, sitting just below because, what is it? I'm trying to figure out what it is. They've played 6 games. They've got one more win. They've got two. Maybe, it must be the losses, I guess, is the tiebreaker there.
Oh, they're below us, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so we've got them in the league and the cup. So, you know, I didn't even think about this. This is interesting because it's going to be a back-to-back. Maybe we'll talk more about it later on, but I'm kind of wondering what each team is going to prioritize. I assume that, you know, being in similar positions in the league, that both the league is the top priority. To me, the league, as much as I love the Open Cup, the league is the priority. If we're going to see, we know we're going to see some kind of rotated lineups out there, but are they going to go younger? Do we maybe play some of our more regular players because we're at home for both games and it's, you know, easier for us to rest and recover and everything else?
Yeah.
That's going to be fascinating to talk about. And then we've got FC Tulsa, who is 9th place in the, so this is definitely this and then Birmingham, the two toughest games in the foreseeable future. It'd be nice to get a little momentum coming out of this one to head into those.
Yeah. I mean, like we've got the last home game against, you know, Vegas, and then we're, you know, away to Sacramento, away to Oakland, home to Louisville. I mean, like we've got a chance here. If we can really rattle off some good wins here on this little run, we can really carry in some pretty decent momentum against some top teams right now in USL. So, you know, look, this is what we excited for. This is what we get excited about. I mean, this is, you know, these are the opportunities that you want as a fan and as a player, I believe, you know. So, yeah, I'm with you. It'll be exciting or interesting to see how they approach the Wednesday Birmingham game versus the Saturday league game. I don't know, man. I mean, it's up to Robbie at that point. But, I mean, even with the guys coming off the bench, I feel good about them coming off the bench, too. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. What do I know? This is why I'm an old guy, you know, sitting on a podcast talking about it on a Thursday night, you know? I mean, what do I know?
Do we want to make it – I mean, this is our thing. We make predictions. I just don't know a lot about Mexico, but look, let's just go for it. Let's live dangerously. What's your prediction?
I am going to go with a 3-1 win for the Rowdies.
Oh, okay. My prediction also involves a total of 4 goals, but I'm looking at a 2-2 draw.
Oh, you son of a.
I know. I hate to do it. I always want to pick the winner somehow, but I'm going 2-2 draw. Feel free to prove me wrong, boys. I would love it. I enjoy being wrong. I love people telling me that I'm wrong. I have a teenage daughter, so I get it a lot. Please prove me wrong. But I'm thinking 2-2 draw. That's kind of where I'm at on that one. You said, there is post-match fireworks. Also, this is being broadcast on CBS Sports Network, and they're not doing the thing where it's like they pick up a feed and you've got commentators in a studio, a trailer somewhere talking about it. Like they're going to be, the CBS is going to be broadcasting from the stadium. Their announcers are going to be at, I believe it's going to be like the Mike Watts, Devin Kerr team coming out for that game, doing that. So I don't know if it's still on Tampa Bay 44, or are they just going to, if it's just a CBS game, I'm not sure how that works.
That's a good question. I don't know either. And, I'm going to have to ask some questions, see if that's the case.
I'm guessing from the way they're promoting it as a CBS game that it's a CBS game.
Yeah.
And like a CBS-only one. Probably like not even ESPN or anything else. Anyway,
yeah, right.
Get out there for the game. I got some stuff I got to do, but if I can make it, I promise I'm going to be out. I know.
Get out there for the game.
I need to clone myself. I just need it to be summer vacation, and I will go to training. I'll be making up for it. I promise.
Folks, you will understand this for you youngins one day. When you become an adult, you have a lot of responsibilities. You get pulled in a lot of directions. So while I give Matt crap, I totally get it. It is totally valid, and I totally understand. But it is going to kick him a little bit of crap because, I mean,
well, yeah. Friends are. What we do. All right, let's get out of here, and I'm trying to get this pushed out here on Friday evening so we have it for people to listen to as they head to the stadium on Saturday. That's what good people do. That's why I'm not a good person. All right, Ben, thanks for hanging out again tonight, helping me. Hey, everything worked. New computer is great. I love this thing, and it's fantastic.
It is fantastic. I'm happy for you, my friend.
I'm excited. I haven't had an actual – I was telling my – another group that I do some online stuff with, I was like, I haven't had an actual like good computer in God knows how long. And so I'm glad I have solved that situation. All right. Let's get out of here. And I will, if I don't see you on Saturday, I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good, man. Come on, you Rowdies.
The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, they kick the ball around. The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, and then they fall on the ground. Oh, the Rowdies! Rowdies are kicking the grass. When the Rowdies play soccer, it's a sight to behold. You'll swear they'll be devils with magical toes. You'll laugh, you'll cheer, you'll leap from your seat when they kick with their head instead of their feet. When the Tampa Bay Rowdies take the field, there's a roar. The fans, loyal fannies, cheer the team they adore.